This is Robert Martellacci of the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's learning and technology e-magazine. Our March Across Canada Spotlight, it features Saskatchewan, and our focus this month is on change leadership. I'm honored to have joined me this evening for Mindshare Learning Moment, Dr. Alec Kouros, Professor of Educational Technology and Media at the Faculty of Education for the University of Regina. Dr. Kouros recently led a bullying conference where students from across the province came together for a day. He helped to facilitate a student-led three-day version in Kelowna, which was also of interest to us. He is currently writing a digital citizenship policy guide for the ministry, as well as planning for a spring MOOC that we'll talk about on digital citizenship that will be available to all Saskatchewan teachers. Dr. Kouros is one of the most highly sought after presenters and experts in social learning and is most prolific on Twitter, and I enjoy following them. Thank you for joining me this evening, Dr. Kouros. You are someone I enjoy following on a regular basis on Twitter. You certainly have embraced that tool. Perhaps we can reflect on when you first, you know, social learning as an open learning is an area of research for you. When did you embark on the Twitter journey?
Twitter, I think I first had my account. It was January 2007. I think I got it the same day as another good person from Saskatchewan, Dean Cheresky. I think my first tweet was something like, I had no idea why someone would use a tool like this. I was incredulity, I guess, in getting a sense of why someone would use this. And obviously, it's exploded. I rarely use it for the first 4 or 5 months, and then it started to make sense. Became a lot more popular. In terms of social learning, I think it happened for me a long time before that. I think I was blogging roughly around 2003 with a lot of other Saskatchewan bloggers, and that to me, I guess, is a more tangible approach to social learning before Twitter. And even before that, I think, in terms of how I approached assignment, my PhD dissertation was on the notion of looking at how networks, say, in the open source programming movement, got people to connect and create really complex things over the internet. So social learning, didn't happen at Twitter. And, before even any of this stuff, we were talking about it certainly in the 60s and, decades before that. But I think what's happened here is some of the tools that you've seen, the Web 2.0 revolution, if you want to call it that,
right,
really put the easy-to-use tools, social tools, into the hands of everyone, individuals, and particularly teachers. That's the area that I'm really focused on.
Absolutely. Now, it doesn't happen overnight. Change leadership is one of our themes for the March issue. And you've shown tremendous leadership. I had the opportunity to interview you back in 2009 at the ECHO conference. You travel the world speaking about your area of expertise. And, working with your students at the faculty there, change leadership, it takes time. Look at the whole Twitter phenomenon. You've been on it. I've been on it since 2007. And here we are in 2014, and it just went public.
Right, yeah. And those people who have put in some money actually made some money out of it, too.
That's right.
All sorts of ways to profit, but I think the most important part is using it appropriately. And so, a big part of what I do in my job is helping students connect in different ways. So, Twitter is one of the many tools that they might use. I have my students blogging and creating digital portfolios and creating about.me pages. And I guess the way that I provide some leadership in that sense is help students understand why it matters to have a network as an educator, what a network can do for you as a teacher, what it can do for you in terms of how you provide support for your students. And I do that hopefully in a way that models it for my teachers to look at. So many of my students are pre-service teachers who are going out into the field eventually, and they'll have students that they'll want to support. They'll want to keep up on the latest professional learning. And I also teach a lot of graduate students as well who are active teachers in the classroom. And so many of the assignments that I teach often relate to using, networks to provide up-to-date sort of professional learning as well as to solve complex problems over networks. And I think that's really, really an important thing. And also, I guess, looking at assessments in different ways, publishing things in visible ways, providing audience for your own work as well as for students, I think that makes a big difference in terms of how we learn and teach.
Absolutely. I'm fascinated by some of the other leaders that have emerged from Saskatchewan in education. Kathy Cassidy, Shelley Wright, you mentioned Dean Cheresky. Your brother George, is he in Saskatchewan or is he in Alberta?
Well, he was
from Saskatchewan,
I mean,
but
we're both born in Humboldt, Saskatchewan.
Right.
And he's in Edmonton now, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some fantastic
ones. Yeah.
Wall, Heather Ross, you know, there's all sorts of people who are doing significant things, you know, and I can name, you know, dozens of teachers who are doing the same thing in their classrooms as well. Really it's, strong in many components. So
yeah, and a couple of names there are past Mindshare Learning Video Challenge winners. And, you know, I had the good fortune of connecting and working closely with some of them and crossing paths. And it's amazing what the internet and social learning tools have enabled us to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, for me, some of it started in Saskatchewan. We had every once in a while we get together for a podcast, but we started a podcast quite a long time ago when, you know, podcasts were sort of started. It was me and Dean Tresky and Rick Schweer and Rob Wall and later Heather Ross, who, you know, just spent some time together talking about what was going on in Saskatchewan. It was the EdTech Posse. And we still put out one every 6 months or so, and I think it's more of a treat. We never really cared about who was listening. We just wanted to get together, and we just happened to publish our conversations, which was the fun part.
Very cool. Now, you're working on a project with the province on digital citizenship.
Yeah. So a couple things. I mean, first of all, back in November, I ran I helped to facilitate a digital citizenship symposium. It was held. There were students representing every single district in the province, and they came together to provide some, you know, youth leadership around the term, that, you know, kind of figuring out what digital citizenship, what it actually means and what it looks like and how students can support it. And I think it was really eye-opening to a lot of students. And it was eye-opening to us as well to see the students take so quickly to it, I guess, in terms of positive ways. One of the things that we wanted to do to make sure that we did it well is to make sure that students were actively using their phones, and in terms of how they actually reported the day, they used Instagram and Vine and, you know, certainly tweeted on our hashtag. And it was really a neat, I think a lot of adults actually, you know, really were a bit nervous at first.
Absolutely.
To see students so actively and openly tweeting and creating, you know, digital artifacts. But it ended up being really, really positive, and it was just a great thing. And then the next day I got on the plane and did a 3-day version with some students in Kelowna, BC, and that was a fantastic summit. The teacher there was Carolyn Durley, and after probably about a year of work, mostly led by Carolyn and these students, they put up together this fantastic student-led 3-day social media summit that focused on bullying and empowerment by students as well. And I guess the other thing related to that is working currently on a policy document for digital citizenship. There is one that's in Alberta already that's a fairly long document. We're trying to create something that's quite tangible and something that can go to every student, teacher, and administrator to have sort of a quick sense of what this is and how do you actually become a citizen, you know, in a digital world.
Fantastic. One of those, as they call them, 21st century skills. How do you subscribe to that these days? Are you still hearing that jargon, that branding used in your travels? There's P21, there's C21.
Right. You know, I actually like Will Richardson's take on it. Modern learners, you know.
Modern learners.
I think I quite like that term that, you know, ultimately. And like, even when I talk about digital citizenship, I try to make sure that I explain it to you know, it's easy to, you know, people know what it is sort of when I use that particular term, but if you were to say something like citizenship, it doesn't quite have that same allure, and it doesn't include the digital, but it should. I mean, really, when we talk about digital citizenship, it's just citizenship, and we talk about digital identity, it's just identity, and so we have to stop using the digital terminology, the appendages to these particular terms, and just understand that the world has changed, and we have to look at things quite a bit differently.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. The notion of, I'm co-chair of the Canadian e-learning enterprise Alliance, and
right.
We talk about perhaps the need to rebrand, because e-learning, you know, it's about learning.
Absolutely,
in the digital age, right?
Yeah.
So what's exciting you these days in education? You know, you're involved with MOOCs, and you'll be launching a MOOC in the spring. Are MOOCs still hot? Is it now? Are there micro MOOCs or something along those lines? I've heard about recently too.
Yeah, I mean, the terminology has kind of got out of hand, really. I mean, you know, even it's kind of got away on everyone. And, you know, I don't know if even the MOOC terminology, you know, out from Dave Cormier really meant to, you know, it was kind of a playful term at the time, just kind of to define what it was that we were trying to do. And then, you know, MIT and Harvard and all of the others, Coursera and Udacity and others took the term and they did all sorts of odd things with it. But really, when it comes down to it, the MOOCs that I really play around with are these connected MOOCs where there's not really a central location or a central instructor that does everything. It's just about building a community. And I'm hoping to do that. So we're running one in Saskatchewan. It'll be available to all Saskatchewan teachers, fairly soon. I think it's in the spring. You know, there'll be more information as it sort of emerges, but this will be a MOOC on digital citizenship that will be available to anyone who wants to learn more about it, and they can take it in a number of ways, asynchronously, synchronously, more of a flipped classroom method. So we're hoping to also, model some of the new pedagogies along with it to give people multi-access to the experience.
Fantastic. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the concept of MOOCs originated, it's a Canadian innovation, if you will, is it not?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, obviously, there's people doing it around the world. I mean, Dave Wiley from Brigham Young University was probably one of the first people doing it sort of at the same time that I was doing, the ones that were kind of pre-MOOCs.
Right.
The actual term itself comes from Dave Cormier, who was working with George Siemens and Stephen
Yeah,
Downs.
With George Siemens,
the
yeah.
The real label MOOC was the CCKO8, done by those three gentlemen.
Well, does our climate have anything to do with this? Because it's damn cold here right now.
I think part of it is, honestly, we've been doing so much with so little funding. I just recently came back from San Diego and I looked at the endowment of the university that I was spending time on, and it was something like, $323 million. And, when they want to do something, they just do it. We've been, the very first sort of open boundary course that I ran was on a shoestring budget. It was really $0. I ran another MOOC with 2,000 people with basically things I put together, from the internet. It's maybe not the best way to do things. You can do a lot more with support, especially when you're paying people. But no one was paid, no software licenses were used and that sort of thing. And we were able to provide a really effective experience. Not ideal in all circumstances. A lot more can get done with a sufficient budget.
Right.
That's been sort of the Saskatchewan experience. For a long time, we struggled to put together, funding and that sort of thing. And so there's a lot of innovation comes out of the constraints of low budgets. And that's just one part of it.
Absolutely. It puts those problem-solving skills to a test, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Now, how's...
It's not sustainable, though, I can tell you that. So this is not an advocation for less money.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, that's a good...
It's been successful, but it's not always that way.
Well, that's a good segue into what's happening at the provincial level in terms of funding and innovation and change.
Yeah, there's a number of things that I think happening that I can't speak about everything happening at the ministry, certainly.
Right.
But I do like the initiative from one particular branch that looks at a better sense of, certainly out of cyber safety, the initiative digital citizenship has been the more positive spin on that. So with the MOOC and with the new policy guides that are coming out, I think these are very positive steps in terms of ed tech. Now, if you look, broader, there's all sorts of interesting things happening across the country as well. I was recently visited Ryerson University and visited their media lab.
Yes.
And it's really quite something, to see researchers and business, the kind of an incubation lab of ideas and theory and students all in the same place. And so some of those things, I'm hoping that I can, bring some of those ideas to Saskatchewan and see if we can get some partnerships with, industry students, those people who are creating educational theory and, bring those people together. So I think we need that shot in the arm, I think, in terms of Saskatchewan to really kind of create a bit of a tech industry to drive some of the innovation that's happening already.
Well, and, we're pretty closely aligned with the Mars Discovery District, and, we hosted our EdTech Leadership Summit there this past fall, and I'm intrigued by it just the same. And I think, it's the whole democratization of learning and innovation. And they're predicting now, there was an article I tweeted out that, in the U.S., that 50% of jobs in the future are going to be independent contractors. And so startups are extremely hot right now. And Canada has more ed tech startups than Silicon Valley.
There's a need for growth here. And I think the province that kind of figures out the best that's where you're looking for a sustainable industry. I think that's, we do live in the knowledge economy. right. on that sector big time, at least
yeah.
growing, you know, ASAP.
I'm happy to help nurture that. Yeah. We're you know, that was our inspiration for getting involved in Niagara region with Connect.
Yeah.
Because we saw untapped potential, unemployment rates are huge. I think it's over 30% for the youth because, you know, kids don't have job opportunity. You know, it's like tourism, casino, wineries, yeah. you know, GM moved out. So, you know, there are many pockets like that across the country where if we get creative and form these interconnected networks
right.
of innovation, that can get really interesting and help the youth.
And I think what's happening here in Ontario is actually allowing that to happen because you're right, yeah, in terms of the diversification and the strength of the economy, you know, it's set back
right.
since manufacturing has moved out. Now, I mean, that puts us at the opposite position in Saskatchewan where we're doing really well with resource prices and so on, that we, from a personal perspective, I can't see that this is going to sustain itself forever.
Right.
And that we'd have to eventually move out to that. And I think the problem is the pressure won't be here in the same way to move to a knowledge economy.
Right.
But it should be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just not going to be like this forever.
Yeah.
But Saskatchewan has done very well in the last few years. I mean, our growth in the province has been great. It's a great place to be. Other than the cold, it was, minus 50
yeah.
yesterday, but...
I might be out there for ERDI. I was out there once before for the Education Research and Development Institute
yeah.
and always enjoy having that deep fried steak and catching the Elvis impersonator that it was outstanding. But at any rate, so what's next for you? Where are your travels taking you? I'm off to South by Southwest EDU. I'm really excited about that event in Austin and hopefully catch some warm weather, get away from this snow.
Well, big trip. I think I'm in Bangkok for about 3 weeks, I think. Spending a lot of time there with a couple conferences and some other kind of networking that I'm doing out there. And then a lot of Ontario in May, three or four places throughout the U.S., I guess. June, Australia in August, is again in September, I think once in June, too. I think three or four times, yeah. A lot of travel coming up, but I'm glad to take the next couple of weeks off from travel. So I'm looking
that's,
forward to
that's good. The novelty does wear off, doesn't it?
It does.
Well,
I often don't get out of the hotel room.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know, I always enjoy following you on Twitter. You have quite a following, and obviously, you know, the knowledge you share is extremely valuable and inspiring, and I appreciate all that you do for education. And I must ask you before we wrap up, what is the one technology that you cannot do without in your day?
I mean, Twitter is one of the big ones. It really is.
Yeah.
That's my daily routine. I read my blogs first. I read my Twitter second, and then I get to my email. It's just basically that's how I kind of the world. I want to read stuff that challenges me before I even look at my email, because that's the thing that I can spend an entire day with.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to be creative, I want to hear other people's ideas first before I get
down
by email.
That's a great strategy.
So part of that, it would be really tough for me to give up Twitter.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of, you know, my ideas come from. And, of course, people who I read. I mean, their blogs are huge to my own thinking. And, of course, the other information sites that I read on a regular basis, huge. And, again, I think that's a tip for anyone is start with good ideas in the morning. Don't start with your email.
Yeah, emails distract. And I don't know how we can get around it. But we need a new model of processing information because...
I would agree. Yep.
I don't enjoy it. But, well, thank you for those words of wisdom. That was Alec Kouros of the University of Regina. Dr. Kouros can be followed on Twitter at KourosA. Thank you again for this wonderful conversation.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Be sure to check out the mindsharelearning.com site to get the latest issue of the Mindshare Learning Report. My name is Robert Martellacci of the Mindshare Learning Report. And until next time, keep the learning curve steep.